Legendary record producer and performer Peter Asher met the Beatles in the spring of 1963, the start of a lifelong association with the band and its members. He had a front row seat as they elevated pop music into an art form, and he was present at the creation of some of the most iconic music of our times. Asher is also a talented musician in his own right, getting a start as half of the duo Peter and Gordon. He will join forces with Jeremy Clyde of Chad and Jeremy for an evening of music and memories featuring songs and stories from their 60s heyday on Friday, March 6th at 8 p.m. at The Egg in Albany. Peter Asher is also the author of the brand new book, The Beatles from A to Z, which grew out of his popular radio program From Me to You on SiriusXM's The Beatles Channel, where he shares memories and insights about the Fab Four. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Peter Asher to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for the amazing intro. That was terrific. You should come everywhere with me. Thank you very
much. You're very welcome. You certainly have accomplished a lot. We'll talk about the book in a moment, but give me a sense of how the collaboration with you and Jeremy Clyde came about.
The Peter and Gordon era was obviously an incredibly long time ago, and then we gradually stopped singing together in about 68, and that's when I, you know, found James Taylor and got and a whole other leg in my career. You know, and eventually Gordon and I got back together, to my surprise, 37 years later to do a few shows. And then when Gordon died, which happened 10 years ago, then it was like, well, will we ever sing these songs again or not? And then, interestingly, my friend Jeremy Clyde, you know, from Chad and Jeremy, who were the other duo of the British invasion, Chad Stewart, his partner, retired. And this was just a couple of years ago. And at that point, you know, Jeremy and I, who both have always enjoyed, you know, being on stage and stuff, and of course Jeremy has a brilliant career as an actor as well, we looked at each other and kind of went, well, you know, what the hell, Peter and Jeremy. And that way, he gets to sing, you know, some Peter and Gordon songs. I get to sing Yesterday's Gone and Summer Song and Chad and Jeremy songs that I've always liked and never sung before. And it just kind of fitted. It made a certain inevitability to it. Because, you know, at the time in the 60s, the duos were so strangely similar that we'd get mistaken for each other all the time. We would do the Ed Sullivan Show and people would congratulate them, or they did some cool appearances like on Dick Van Dyke and Patty Duke, and people would tell us how funny we were, and eventually we'd just go, thank you very much, you know. And so when we realized that we were both, you know, here was I, Peter, and here was he and Jeremy, both on our own, we went, well, in addition to doing whatever we do on our own, and we both have separate careers, obviously, we decided it would be fun to do some shows together, so we do.
Now, are you on stage together the entire time, or do you have your time you're on together?
No, it's a joint effort throughout. So even if it's a song that one of us do pretty much on our own, the other one still plays or joins in or sings some harmony or whatever. So it's a joint show from beginning to end.
I mentioned in the introduction that it's a night of music and memory, so you get to tell a lot of good stories, I assume, as well.
We do. We tell a lot of stories, and the stories are interminable, believe me. And there's plenty of video and photos and stuff to go with it. We put together a whole kind of multimedia thing of that covers, you know, many decades, as we do at this point.
You are also the author of the book I mentioned, The Beatles from A to Z. This is just a great, really fun book. It comes out of your SiriusXM show, which I love. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that program. So what got you thinking in the alphabetical sense?
Oh, desperation, I think. I mean, you know, when you're doing a radio show every week, as you know, and in my show, I had to figure out ways to think about Beatles music and ways even to decide which Beatles song to concentrate on. So I decided to use the alphabet for a series of obviously 26 shows, roughly, not trying to be encyclopedic or completist in any way, using the alphabet more like Sesame Street does, you know, just as like a jumping off point. So this week it's the letter C, and it wouldn't just be songs that began with the letter C. It could be people, places, musical instruments, musical styles, you know, anything. So the alphabet provided me with a very rough jumping off point, and that was that series of radio shows. And then it was actually not my idea, I have to confess. It was a publisher who came to me, Henry Holt, a very distinguished publisher, and I thought that was cool. They said, we think those shows could make a good book. And of course, I thought, in my foolishness, I thought, well, that'll be easy. You just transcribe everything I said on the radio. But what happens when you do that and you start reading it, you go, this is not ready to be a book at all. So So you have to rewrite everything. And eventually it dawned on me, I really did have to sit down and write the bloody book, which I did. And so that came out a couple of months before Christmas. And I'm happy to say it's done quite well. It's on its third printing already. So and it was interesting. It was much harder work than I expected and more demanding. Because also, of course, on the radio, you talk about a song and then you play it. And
right.
And in the book, you got to talk about the song and then talk some more about it. You know? So I had to explain what it was that I thought was so miraculous about Ringo's drum fills and a certain song or whatever I was talking about. So I ended up having to do quite a bit more research and a bit more thinking and a bit more listening and to get the whole thing written.
You talk about miraculous, but to me, miraculous is that you're writing a book about the Beatles, and I have read probably not everything written about the Beatles, but a lot of stuff about the Beatles, and yet I found this very fresh, very new, and stories I've never heard before.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you. That's good to hear, because it's a combination of things that I was lucky enough to actually be there for and that I remember personally because I was there, and other stuff that I've read about or heard about, and some research. It's a mixture of all of those, and I cover a lot of different subjects. It's pretty kind of peripatetic. I jump topics quite readily and follow little diversions as far as they will lead me. So it's in that sense, it's quite free-ranging, but I like to think, yeah, there's maybe some new perspectives on stuff, I hope.
James Taylor says of the book, who better than Peter to tell us these stories? Who else can offer a loving, smart, and funny firsthand look at the defining cultural event of our time? I just finished listening to James's Break Shot audiobook, and boy, you're all through that thing.
Yeah, I would think so. I just hope most of it's nice. I actually haven't sat and listened to the whole thing myself. I should, but I mean, I know those stories and I've heard James tell them. But I understand that his Audible thing is really terrific. So I've got to sit down and listen to it properly. But I don't imagine I'm going to hear anything I don't know. But you never know.
It is again. I found it interesting because there's aspects of James Taylor's career that I wasn't aware of, and the connection. And he obviously tells good Beatles stories in there as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the fact that of your advice to him, of signing him, of understanding him so early was really fascinating.
Well, good. Yes, I mean I fell in love with his music. You know, he showed up in my flat in London. You know, we were introduced by a mutual friend, as he writes about, and you know, Danny Kortchmar. But he basically showed up in my flat, played me some songs, and completely blew me away. I mean, I was impressed beyond measure and became a huge fan. And that's why I signed him to Apple. And then when Apple started to fall apart, that's why I essentially bet my career on his. And we agreed that I would become his manager as well as his producer. And we left for America. And, you know, that relationship continued for 25 years or so. And we remain great friends to this day.
What did you like to accomplish? What did you feel your role was as a record producer? You've worked with James Taylor and, of course, Linda Ronstadt, Neil Diamond, Robin Williams, Cher, and many others. What did you see your role as in being a producer?
To help them make the best possible record they can make. I mean, of course, in some cases, you already know what the song is. In some cases, you're choosing songs, like with Linda Ronstadt. But in some cases, you know the song, and then it's really just a question of how to frame that song musically in the best possible way to amplify, clarify what it is that makes the song great and what makes James great or makes Cher great or makes Diana Ross great or all the other people I've had the good fortune of working with, and find a way to make that very clear and also to make the record enjoyable to listen to, because the point of making a record, in especially certainly a pop record, is you want those records where as soon as it gets to the end, people want to put the needle right back to the beginning and play it again. That's what makes a hit. So you want to make it something that's a great experience, emotionally moving or just catchy or all of the above. You want them to go, I want to hear that again. Who is that? Tell me about that song. And you try to frame the song in a way that's going to accomplish that. How you do that is different in every case.
And this may be an impossible question to answer, or maybe not. How much of it is your role as a producer, and how much is it up to the artist?
It's joint. I mean, you sit down and talk to the artist at every stage. Some artists are present all the time, you know, like Linda and James, both. Every day I was in the studio, they were with me. But there's other artists like Cher, who knows what she wants, but once she's communicated it to you, and you know she's off doing something else or making a movie or designing the next perfume bottle or whatever it is, you know, she's an extraordinary and multifaceted woman. And then you go off and make the record, hoping you're doing it the way she wants it. And she prefers to come in and sing when everything's done, or did at least when I was working with her back then. So the actual precise nature of the relationship changes. But in the end, it is all a collaboration. I'm not the kind of producer who has a sound entirely of his own and just fits the artist into that the way, say, Phil Spector did so brilliantly. I work with the artist to create the record they have in mind and I have in mind. And, of course, I make plenty of suggestions of my own, don't get me wrong, as does the artist. But it's a mixture.
When you started that process of making the transition from being a performer to being a producer, was that at all a challenge, or did you make that transformation very easily?
It was a challenge because I really wanted to do it. Once I was in the studio as an artist, the very first day I was ever in the studio, I pretty much knew I wanted to be a record producer. I loved the process. I loved the technology. I loved everything about it and continue to love it. Back then, of course, the problem was that now, you know, if you want to be a record producer, you can say to someone, look, I've sat on my laptop in my bedroom for a week. Listen to what I've come up with. Isn't this great? I should be a record producer. It's done. None of that existed. So the only way to be a producer was in a studio with musicians. So you had to actually get someone to finance or arrange or facilitate something like that. So you had to sell your ideas by talking about them. You couldn't put together a rough version of what you meant on your laptop the way you can today, which is, it's hard to imagine, but you couldn't make a record without a real studio and without real musicians. It was quite challenging to actually get a shot at production.
What did you learn in those early years at Apple that stayed with you, in the sense of that you start off and you catch lightning in a bottle. So then how do you do that again?
I don't know. That's good fortune. I mean, I think I've had a lot of luck throughout my career. If I give myself credit for anything, it's that I'm quite good at seeing an opportunity and grabbing it with both hands. And, you know, I've never hesitated to jump from one section of my career to the next. You know, when I was a philosophy student at London University, I certainly was expecting to be a pop star, you know, with a number one record around the world a year later, or then be managing the hottest act on the cover of Time magazine, or a year after that, or whatever. You know, all these things happened. It was extraordinary, and a great deal of luck was involved. So the lightning just, to some extent, hit me, and that was my good fortune, the lightning in a bottle. But, you know, I don't know exactly. It's just you just make the best of everything that comes along, and I've been lucky. And, you know, I remember the first time I heard James. I remember the first time I heard Linda, and just kind of went, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just great. And I get excited, and I still do. You know, I'm as excited about new music and being in the studio and all that stuff as much now as I ever was.
Did that philosophic training come in handy?
I don't know. It's a good question. You know, I'd chosen it, I think, because it was the vaguest subject there was. It didn't commit you to any particular line of work, you know, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. I suppose so. It's interesting. You know, I've run into quite a few people. I work a lot with Steve Martin, as you may know, and he studied philosophy at university as well. Whether it affects his career or mine, I don't know, but I enjoyed it. I'm a science nut in particular, but I still enjoy philosophy as well.
Well, Peter Asher's new book is The Beatles from A to Z. It is published by Henry Holt. Also, he is going to be performing with Jeremy Clyde on Friday, March 6th at 8 p.m. at The Egg in Albany. You can find out more information by going to theegg.org. Peter Asher, what a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
It was great talking to you, too. Really, really cool. Good questions, and I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.